Hi loves, it's me, Lee Nix, back with the Memory of Malice. I'm here with the episode I talked about last week, the Teikoku Bank incident. I recently got DK's The Crime Book for inspiration purposes, and I was idly flipping through it when I landed on the pages about Hirasawa Sadamichi. I found the case fascinating, especially since I'd never heard of it before, and I decided to do an episode on it. I had no idea what I was getting into. Every time I thought I had a grip on the truth of this case, it just slipped away from me. I researched more for this case than any other case I've done, and I know there's more information that I just don't have access to. This episode is going to be in two parts, and that's for two reasons. One, I recorded the whole episode, and it's over an hour long. So I figured breaking it in two would make it easier to digest. And two, I'm so behind in my research right now, and it gives me some extra time to catch up, without taking an upload break or doing a subpar research job. I hope all of you can forgive me. Quick warning that there are mentions of attempted suicide in this episode. If you need to skip this one, do so. You are more important than a true crime episode. So join me on a trip to post-war Japan as we investigate the Teikoku Bank incident. Before I begin, I want to discuss my sources for this episode. A major source was Flowering of the Bamboo by William Triplett, which is probably the most complete source of information on the case in English. Other sources were articles and websites. There's a language barrier to information in this case. There are books on this case in Japanese, but I don't speak the language, and there are no English translations. Having someone translate entire books for me isn't financially feasible. Otherwise, you better believe I would have. I want to apologize if I have any holes in my knowledge of the case. I'm also following the Japanese name order in this episode, which is last name, first name. For example, instead of John Doe, Japanese names will be in Doe-John order. This is just because that's the naming convention in Japan, and I want to be as respectful as possible when discussing a case from a different culture. Let's get into it. For the city of Tokyo, January 26, 1948, had turned into a day of foul weather. Any road that wasn't paved was a mud puddle, and that was quite a few roads. Japan was struggling economically after World War II and underneath the US occupation. And that doesn't even take into account the massive damage done to Tokyo during the war. Nearly 51% of the city had burned to the ground under the force of US B-52 firebombing that targeted civilians, an act pointed to as a war crime. The rubble and burnt-out shells of homes and stores remained. The Teikoku Bank was nestled in trees less than 100 yards away from the Shinamachi train station. Teikoku means imperial in Japanese. Thus, this was a branch of the Imperial Bank of Japan. The front way to the bank was paved and had evaded most of the mud of the downpour, but the back entrance was pretty much a bog by 3 o'clock that day. At the beginning of the workday that morning, the building contained 13 employees and one man we would describe today as a janitor, but he was described then in official documents with the term servant. The janitor was named Takizawa Tatsuo, and he lived in an attached apartment on the bank property with his wife, 19-year-old daughter, and 8-year-old son. That morning, bank manager Ushiyama Senji called out sick. He'd had some sort of lingering stomach illness for some time. When the business closed that day, only 16 people remained in the building. They quickly began doing their after-hours work, eager to head home. There was a rapping on the side door, and 19-year-old Akazawa Yoshiko opened it to see a man standing outside. He was dressed nicely, with an armband around his arm that indicated he had come from Tokyo City Hall. Metropolitan office. He carried a small bag over one shoulder and readily handed her his card. In Japan, it was customary at that time to trade name cards upon meeting. I couldn't find much about this particular custom, how and why it evolved. Still, I do know that there's etiquette surrounding business cards in many East Asian countries. That's possibly related, but I'm not knowledgeable about the subject. Name cards play an important role in our story today. But for now, all we need to know is that the man's business card had the following printed on it. Yamaguchi Jiro, MD, Tokyo Metropolitan Office. Welfare Department, Welfare Ministry. Dr. Yamaguchi told Akazawa that he needed to speak with the manager, and she led him to Assistant Manager Yoshida. Before continuing, there's a weird detail in this case. William Triplett refers to the assistant manager as Yoshida, and the memo I have actually concurs and describes him as Yoshida Takijiro. But the actual victims list in the same memo does not list him at all. There is an Ueda Takijiro. There's every chance that maybe the person who translated the memo into English at the time mistranslated the names, of course. A few of the names were visibly misspelled, even. But I do find it odd that I can't find another place to find these names in English anywhere. This is a long-winded way of apologizing for not having the answer to this. Dr. Yamaguchi explained to Yoshida that there had been an outbreak of dysentery at a local well, and that Lieutenant Parker from the American forces had sent him to inoculate everyone in the bank. Yoshida complied and began gathering the 15 others while Dr. Yamaguchi prepared the inoculation. Something I immediately found strange about this is that there is no inoculation for dysentery. There's still an active effort to come up with a vaccine for it to this day. But the bank employees must not have realized this. Yamaguchi pulled a metal box about 3 centimeters by 15 centimeters, or about 1.2 inches by 6 inches, from his bag, and from the box he removed 2 different size medicine bottles. The small bottle had the word first written in English on it, while the larger one had the word second. He collected 16 teacups and carefully put 2 drops from the first bottle in each cup, using a large eyedropper. He explained to everyone assembled that this first drug could cause tooth damage if they didn't drink it in a specific way. He sucked up some of the solution from the first bottle into the eyedropper and demonstrated how they should put the medicine on their tongue and tilt their heads back, letting gravity roll the medicine down into their throats. The employees in the Takizawas did as they were told, taking the medicine even though it was very bitter. Meanwhile, Yamaguchi poured a quantity from the second bottle into each teacup, but made them wait a full minute between doses before allowing them to take it. He then directed them to rinse their mouths out so that the caustic first dose wouldn't linger and damage their teeth. As they staggered to find water, the bank employees began to realize that something was wrong. Several collapsed before reaching their targets, teacups strewn across the floor around them. As 16 people lay dying on the floor, their poisoner calmly robbed the bank and left. Murata Masako somehow managed to drag herself from the bank and into the street just before 4. She managed to alert startled passersby to the situation at the bank, but no one initially knew what had happened. The people in the bank who were still living were rushed to the hospital, and the police and locals assumed that they'd been struck by food poisoning. The scene wasn't preserved, and the teacups were washed. It was only when police began questioning survivors at the hospital that they realized something terrible had happened. Fourteen people died at the bank. In cases of mass murder, I've noticed that we tend to depersonalize the victims. We rarely use their names. Maybe that's a way we deal with the pain of loss at scale. But now that I've noticed it, it's hard to ignore. I have one list of the victims, and it's likely there are inaccuracies in the translation of it. However, since it is all I was able to find, I'd still like to share the names of those poisoned. First are survivors. Murata Masako, age unknown, though she's described as young and pretty in Flowering of the Bamboo. Ueda Takijiro, 43. Tanaka Tokuzawa and Akazawa Yoshiko, both 19 years old. Next, the bank employees who passed away. Takeuchi Sutijiro, 49. Watanabe Yoshiasu, 43. Nishimura Hidehiko, 38. Shirai Shoichi, 29. Ikiyama Miyako and Uchida Hideko, both 23 years old. Sawada Yoshi, 22. Kato Taruko, 16. The entire Takizawa family died that day. Father Takizawa Tatsuo, 46. His wife Takizawa Ryu, 49. And their children, Takizawa Takako and Takizawa Yoshihiro, who were 19 and 8, respectively. Autopsies were done on the bodies, but the poison dosage had left almost no traces behind for doctors to find. While they were certain it was a cyanide, they weren't sure whether it was hydrogen cyanide, cyanic silver, or potassium cyanide, because the killer had used the absolute smallest dose he could and still achieved death. Whoever had done this definitely knew how to handle poison. You may hear this crime referred to as the Teikoku Bank Incident, the Teigin Incident, or the Teigin-Jikin interchangeably, so I'd like to quickly cover it to clear up any confusion. All of these terms mean functionally the same thing. I already told you that Teikoku means imperial. Ginko means bank, and Jikin means incident. So a lot of Japanese sources just shorten the word into Teigin, and say Teigin-Jikin. This passed over to us, and so some people say Teigin Incident. It's the same thing. During the Teikoku incident, the poisoner had taken around 160,000 yen and a check that had been deposited by someone named Goto Toyoharu. I want to explain why that's a laughably small amount of money, but first I have to confess that I cannot find an accurate exchange rate for the time of the murder anywhere. I saw a stat that said 270 yen to the dollar in March of 1948. There are articles I've read that said the US dollar was 15 times more valuable than the yen. But that's actually a fantastic exchange rate, considering that during its peak in 1995, it was 80 yen to the US dollar. Basically, I had to make a concession here, or I'd never find out. The U.S. used the Bretton Woods system to tie the value of the yen at 360 yen to one U.S. dollar in 1949. This meant that no matter the market fluctuation, the value of the yen was always the same. So I'm just going to fudge it and use that value to give a ballpark of any money amounts in this episode. I apologize in advance for any errors. So 160,000 yen was about $444. 16 people were poisoned, and 14 died for less than half a grand. Even in today's money, that's about 985,269 yen, or $7,455. And before you think that it was the robber's bad luck not to make off with more money, he clearly ignored 300,000 yen just sitting on one of the employees' desks. It's visible in the crime scene photos. The check that was taken is just odd. It's obviously part of the crime. When they tried to track Goto down, he didn't exist. But no one remembered the poisoner coming in earlier to deposit this check, nor could they explain why it was a necessary part of the crime. I have a theory as to why the check was taken, but we'll get into that towards the end of the next episode. Though washing the teacups certainly dealt a blow to the case, there was still evidence for the Metropolitan Police to investigate. They divided their investigation into four teams so they could each tackle one aspect of the case. One team's job was to investigate the name card used in the crime. It's a safe bet that Dr. Yamaguchi Diro was not the killer's real name, but they could still try to track down who had printed that card. The next team was there to investigate the robbery. They were there to follow the money, as it were. A careless thief might leave a trail that could lead right to them. The third team's job was to investigate cyanide. All cyanide. Where you could buy them, how they could be used, and who had access to them. There are many different types of cyanide, and a lot of them have innocent uses. Finally, the fourth group's entire job was to investigate and analyze the methodology used by the killer in the crime. How had the killer given the people in the bank the poison? How had he convinced 16 people to go along with him? Everything from the careful drops of poison in each teacup to the English letters on the bottles would be taken into account and investigated. The investigation still wouldn't be easy. The Metropolitan Police was extremely understaffed and underfunded. The same economic struggle that was affecting the rest of the country was affecting the police force as well, and they were lucky to have a phone line in their police stations. Still, they made progress. The name card team discovered that Yamaguchi Jiro was a real person. He'd even actually been employed by the Welfare Ministry until 1947, but he was fired due to some kind of improper conduct. I so badly want to know what he did, but that is literally all I know. There doesn't seem to be any more information about him anywhere. Every step the police took was eagerly reported by the Japanese newspapers. Sometimes it seemed like they knew things before the police could even learn of them. But it was in this way that much information came forward that might not have been found otherwise. When the papers reported what had happened at the Teikoku Bank, a bank manager realized his bank also had a check made out to Goto Toyoharu. The police were unable to track this Goto Toyoharu down, but they kept the check to compare handwriting if they found a suspect. Another bank manager thought the situation described in the newspaper seemed very familiar. A doctor had visited his bank, saying he'd been sent by Lieutenant Parker, and disinfected money that he'd said had been deposited by someone who'd been diagnosed with dysentery. He had worn the same armband, bearing the name of the Tokyo Metropolitan Office. The doctor had dripped some sort of liquid on the money and left. No one was poisoned, and no money was taken. But those weren't the only differences in his visit. The name card the doctor had left wasn't for Yamaguchi Jiro, but for Dr. Matsui Shigeru. And though the police originally thought that this was a fake name, it turned out that Matsui Shigeru was a real person, and he had the evidence that would break their case wide open. Dr. Matsui Shigeru was a real doctor who worked for the Welfare Ministry. When the investigators questioned him, he was able to provide an alibi, proving he hadn't been the perpetrator of the crime. However, he could still assist them. Dr. Matsui was able to give the police the name cards he had received when he had given his own name card out. Usually, giving the cards is reciprocal. You give someone your card, and then they give you their card back. He kept these cards, and had even written the dates on which he'd received them on the back. This was valuable to the police because they knew whoever had poisoned the people in the Teikoku Bank had practiced at the other bank, and they'd had Dr. Matsui's card. Unless it had been stolen from him, it was probably one of the people in this collection of cards. He had given out around 90 cards, which means around 90 possible suspects to investigate. The police seemed to be closing in on a suspect. An artist in his 50s probably isn't the first person that comes to mind when you think of a poisonous bank robber. But Hirasawa Sadamichi was one of the people who had received Matsui Shigeru's name cards. Once, he had been a rising star in the art world. He was a tempera painter. Tempera painting is one of the oldest styles of painting in the world, where the paints are made mainly with egg and pigments. It's not a very common painting style anymore, but Hirasawa was highly skilled with the medium. Hirasawa's days of great success had mostly left him. His paintings had been chosen 16 times to hang in the Imperial Exhibition, but in a post-World War II landscape, that was less of a selling point. These days, the artist was having trouble paying his bills. He was asked whether he had an alibi for the day of the murders, and he said he was playing cards with his daughter's boyfriend. He wasn't sure of the man's name. It was either Wayne Eddy or Wayne Eli. However, the man was an American GI. When the police asked him whether he still had Dr. Matsui's card, Hirasawa replied that he did not, that his wallet had been stolen by a pickpocket. The police, specifically Inspector Igi Tamagoro, did not believe this. He came up with a plan to get Hirasawa's photo for identification purposes. It was apparently the custom at some restaurants of the time to have your photograph taken after the meal. Igi invited Hirasawa to dine at one of these restaurants. According to Igi, when the time came for their photograph to be taken, Hirasawa appeared uncomfortable and kept turning and ducking his head. Nevertheless, a photograph was taken. While searching Hirasawa's home, the police found 45,000 yen. This was about 125 US dollars, or roughly 2,200 US dollars today. Not really a huge amount of money, but they wanted to know where he got it from. Hirasawa refused to answer their question. Though the police had no direct evidence against him, they detained Hirasawa Sadamichi and brought him in for questioning. They attempted to have their witnesses, 40 of them, from the original incident and other targeted banks, identify him, but this really didn't work in their favor. Of their 40 witnesses, only 2 would ever identify Hirasawa as the poisoner. 11 didn't think that Hirasawa was the suspect, and 6 were absolutely certain he was not the man. Murata Masako would say that the suspect's face was round like an egg, and that Hirasawa's jaw was too square. Furthermore, the police didn't carry out these identifications in the way you would expect. There was no suspect lineup. Hirasawa was the sole man in the room, and the witnesses were just asked whether he was the man or not. It didn't matter. The police chose to disregard the witnesses who didn't fit their agenda. They kept Hirasawa for questioning. They arrested Hirasawa Sadamichi on a 48-hour hold on August 24, 1948. The police told the papers that they just wanted to know where the money came from, and they would release him when they got a satisfactory answer. Hirasawa would end up telling them he got it from an art patron, but the art patron denied it. When a reporter went to interview Hirasawa's wife and daughter about his arrest, he ended up being the first person to inform them about it. They were so disbelieving that they burst into laughter. They found the whole idea unbelievable. Inspector Igi went to the newspapers on the 25th of August, the very next day, and told them that he was 100% certain that Hirasawa was guilty. The public view of the case was not the same. The article in which that quote ran had the headline, "Mass Murder Suspect Cleared, Police Baffled." The Attorney General's Office of Japan said that when, not if, but when, Hirasawa was cleared, he could sue the Metropolitan Police Board for violating his civil rights. The Civil Liberties Bureau viewed Inspector Igi's remarks as slanderous and prejudicial. The day after Igi made slanderous remarks to the newspapers, Hirasawa attempted suicide in his jail cell. He wrote, "I am innocent," on the wall in his own blood. This only made the police more certain that he had committed the crime. After his suicide attempt, Hirasawa was transferred to the procurator's office for questioning. Honest admission time. I'm not certain what a procurator is in Japan. I think it might be similar to a prosecutor. Google says it's similar, but they have more far-reaching responsibilities. Either way, the procurator was now in charge of Hirasawa's questioning. He would be questioned by then-assistant procurator Takagi Hajime. On September 5th, 12 days after his arrest on a 48-hour hold, the police turn up people accusing Hirasawa of fraud. They charge him with these crimes to keep holding him. I can't find any information on these charges. I will say it is certainly convenient that after being threatened with a lawsuit by the Attorney General's office, they suddenly come up with crimes to justify holding on to Hirasawa. However, just because I can't find details doesn't mean the crimes didn't happen. I'm at the mercy of translated information. On September 10th, the police discover that Hirasawa had deposited 80,000 yen in a bank account 3 days after the Teikoku killings. This is roughly equivalent to $222 then, and 3,900 USD now. The timing of this deposit is suspicious. September 12th, things looked worse when they found Hirasawa had given his wife 65,000 yen shortly after the crime. I would like to know what they meant by shortly. There were months between the Teikoku incident and Hirasawa's arrest, but that's all I know. Once again, 65,000 yen was somewhere around $181 in U.S. money in 1948, and now that's about $3,100 today. I swear I've done so much math for this case. The police proudly told the newspapers that the money they had found equaled the money stolen, which it doesn't. 45,000 plus 80,000 plus 65,000 equals 190,000. I understand the money stolen in the bank is always stated as around 160,000 yen, but I don't think estimates were that far off. But I'm going off topic again. On September 14th, the police found out that Hirasawa used potassium cyanide to mix one of his paint pigments. There's no evidence that he has any technical knowledge of poisons besides this one use, and cyanide is used often for a huge number of innocent purposes, such as painting. The next day, on September 15th, two random people showed up at the police station claiming that Hirasawa had performed back-alley abortions on almost a dozen women. There's no evidence this ever occurred, but the police happily shared the story with the newspapers, and the papers ran it. On September 27, 1948, Hirasawa Sadamichi confessed to the Teikoku Bank poisoning. Two American journalists were allowed to interview him immediately after he confessed. He attested that the admission was of his own free will and that he felt regret for committing such a horrible act. "At last I am able to sleep," he said. Even if you ignore all the theories and only look at the evidence against Hirasawa Sadamichi, you can see that the case against him is weak. I'm going to go over it quickly again so we can have a clear view. The police know that the killer left Dr. Matsui Shigeru's card at one of the banks. Hirasawa Sadamichi does not have the card that Dr. Matsui gave him. However, Hirasawa says his wallet was stolen from him. This is a reasonable explanation. Also, the police found others that did not have their cards from Dr. Matsui either. They were cleared because of alibis, or because they did not match the suspect's sketch. A sketch that Hirasawa doesn't resemble either. Around 160,000 yen was stolen from the Teikoku Bank. 45,000 yen was found in Hirasawa's home. He had given 65,000 yen to his wife sometime after the murders, and had deposited 80,000 yen some days after. There are theories as to how Hirasawa had this money, but it really doesn't matter. Even if the amounts match, which they do not, there is no way to link the money to the bank. Remember that the amount stolen from the bank wasn't a huge amount of money. 190,000 yen was roughly equal to $528 back then. Today, it's roughly equal to $8,850. It's not like he magically came into $1 million. He might have gotten paid for a painting. Two witnesses had identified him as the killer. Two witnesses out of 40. 11 said he wasn't. 6 said he definitely wasn't. He didn't even resemble the composite sketch the police made, though they cut his hair to match the haircut the suspect had in an earnest effort to make him look like it. He used cyanide for one of his paint pigments, meaning he had access to and knew how to use the chemical. Here's what the CDC has to say about what just hydrogen cyanide can be used for. Fumigation, electroplating, mining, chemical synthesis, and the production of synthetic fibers, plastics, dyes, and pesticides. I doubt all the workers who use cyanide every day are master poisoners. You can use something, even something incredibly dangerous, without fully understanding it or being an expert on it. Hirasawa's alibi could never be corroborated. Hirasawa's attorney attempted to stop the GI's return to the States so he could testify on Hirasawa's behalf, but the court rejected his plea, so the attorney wasn't able to subpoena the only person who could corroborate the artist's alibi. The author of Flowering of the Bamboo attempted to track this man down, but was unsuccessful. We can assume he was real, as the attorney wanted to file a motion to keep him in Japan. There's more evidence against Hirasawa's culpability in the crime, and I will go over it, but for now, we should move on. Regardless of the lack of evidence in this case, Hirasawa had confessed. Before his trial, he would retract his confession. He had been held for over a month and had been questioned 62 times. When he'd told those American journalists, "At last I am able to sleep," it hadn't been an admission of guilt. According to Hirasawa, the police were refusing him sleep as a torture tactic. But the damage had been done. On July 12, 1950, Hirasawa Sadamichi was convicted of 12 counts of murder and 4 counts of attempted murder, and he was sentenced to death by hanging. Almost immediately, there was public pushback. Author Morikawa Tetsuro founded the Society to Save Hirasawa. He was determined to see Hirasawa's name cleared. Hirasawa's first appeal was denied in 1951. This was the first of many, many attempts to clear his name. As of this recording, I believe his supporters are attempting the 21st or the 22nd attempt. His first hurdle would come from a lack of familial support. Hirasawa's wife and daughters disowned him when he was convicted. His wife divorced him in 1952. From my understanding, this had to do with the social pressure they faced, and it was an action that Hirasawa himself understood. But it caused a problem because only a family member could take legal action on his behalf. Morikawa had a rather unusual solution to this problem. He discussed the problem with his 22-year-old son, Morikawa Takehiko, and they decided the best choice was for Hirasawa Sadamichi to adopt Takehiko. Thus, he became Hirasawa Takehiko, and he was one of the driving forces to clear his adopted father's name. The society began its own investigations into who could have really poisoned those at the Teikoku Bank, and the results led to a conspiracy theory featuring Japanese war crimes, a U.S. cover-up, and surprising evidence that seems to make at least part of their theory plausible. And that's where we're going to end part one. Tune in for part two on February 3rd. If you would like to help support this podcast, please like, subscribe, share. I also have a Ko-fi and a Patreon. Patreon supporters get their name at the end of YouTube episodes and access to perks. I'm actually working on a Patreon-exclusive episode of the podcast right now, and that will be up as soon as I'm done with it. Stay safe and stay hydrated.